What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Once again, Willie Donick along with Chase McCabe and Marquise Munson. We've got Darren McFarland on vacation, continuing to enjoy himself. Marquise is back at the studio holding it down. And we are ready for another big show. A big, big day coming in the TSSAA.
Yep.
As they try to wrap their arms around what's in front of them for the fall sports. And it is something we've discussed, you know, pretty much throughout the spring and the summer to this point, just trying to figure out what everybody's going to do. And with the governor issuing basically an emergency situation through the end of August, it looks like there is at the very least going to be a delay to the start of the season for the fall sports, in particular for football and girls soccer. Of course, I've got a girls soccer player who's heading into her senior year, so I'm very anxious to know what they're going to talk about in this meeting today. But Chase, we're going to talk about it on the show and give you as much coverage as we can with the TSSAA meetings that are going on today.
Yeah, and actually, I believe there is a board meeting as we speak.
Right, starting right now, and I think there's another meeting at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's more specific to particular sports, but
There's a lot. I mean, there's obviously a lot going on, and Tom Crager of the Tennessean, you know, he's obviously very in tune with this, so he's a good follow on Twitter to at Crager to keep up with everything. I know that there are several proposals that I have seen, and Tom put this out, that the Tennessee Football Coaches Association has proposed three options for its football coaches to vote on. Number one, just condense the season, 8 games, 4-round playoffs, keep it in the fall. So whenever you can get it in, just condense the season. Two, flip-flop fall and spring sports. I don't love that one, if I'm being honest. Three, the Virginia plan, which would mean what Virginia's doing, the season would start in February. So
if the season started in February, I'm just trying to wrap my arms around this because I heard him, I was actually listening to Tom. He was doing a little, I think, Periscope, but I was trying to sort through some of the issues here because I knew we were going to talk about it today. But the Virginia plan, if you played in February, first of all, it'd be very cold. And number two, how would that affect players who play a sport in the fall, like football, and then another sport in the spring, let's say baseball or track? How would that work?
Right, and that's why they're proposing to flip-flop the schedules. So I guess that would mean you would have baseball, softball, track. Do you put boys soccer in the fall? But because the whole everything I was reading, like girls soccer and football, they can't start on time because they're in close proximity. So obviously you would have the same problem with boys soccer, at least baseball, you're a little more spread out. I don't really know if flip flopping is the way to go. That's just kind of, I think you're creating more issues there. To me, the best course of action is just condense the season, play 8 games, and try and play it in the fall as scheduled, because you're not going to rock other people's apple carts by doing that. And I know that everybody is in that, you know, spring sports already got canceled basically this past spring. So, you know, I understand that it's a weird year for everybody, but I think if you can come up with a plan that alters as little as possible, that's obviously the plan that they're going to try and do. But I know that's easier said than done.
Right. There's certainly a lot of unknowns. I agree. Whichever way you go, there is a possibility that it won't work out the way you want it to, right?
Yeah.
I agree with you. The swap, while maybe at first brush, you're thinking, okay, maybe that could work. But for example, boys soccer is in the spring, which I'm really not, I've never understood really why they do that. I feel like boys and girls soccer should both be in the fall. But the way it is, boys soccer is in the spring. So if you can't play girls soccer in the fall, then if you move boys soccer to the fall, then you'd be in the boys would be in the same situation that the girls are in right now. So I don't know that you could play soccer. So that I don't know that all the sports would be able to be flopped. So I think there are all kinds of questions that come up. It makes it even more complicated if you tried to do the swap. I do wonder if you could play a condensed season, try to get as much of it in as you can in football and girls soccer, and then maybe have a little window to finish after the Christmas break, you know, in that Virginia, a little bit part of the Virginia plan in February or whatever, before the spring sports get started, even into March, if there's a way you could finish up what you didn't finish before in a worst case scenario. You try to finish it around Christmas time or something like that, but if you didn't, you leave yourself a little window to finish what you didn't.
Right. And that's that, I think, is the, I'm not going to say necessarily the best course of action. I don't know if there is such thing as a best course of action these days.
No, because then you start getting into, well, what about basketball?
Right.
In the winter sports. If somebody plays football and basketball, which I'm sure there are tons of people that do that, or soccer and basketball in the case of the girls, right?
Yeah.
Then how would you do that? If you had to finish your fall sport while your winter sport is at the stretch run. You know, February is a big sport. February is a big month for basketball, yeah. Right? That's down the stretch, and you really, I think you're even starting postseason for a portion of that month. So lots of issues.
This is what we don't think about, Willie. And maybe you do because your kids, you know, play, but this is something that I've never really thought about, of just the domino effect of everything. Because if you move one piece, it's going to knock over the other pieces. I mean, football being affected now affects basketball, now affects baseball, or the fall sports now affect the winter sports and now affect the spring sports. And it shows you just how tight everything is and there's no wiggle room. Now, does that change? Do we look at this and go, okay, yes, nobody saw this coming, but this is something we need to be prepared for, so we figure this out. But, I mean, at this point, you're just kind of stuck. You're going to have to figure it out as you go. And something's going to be affected. It's just what is the best way to go about it that you're going to affect something the least, and that's what they're trying to figure out with these conversations. Because you know, right now with the governor's order, they can't even practice. They can't do anything until August 29th. So
that's what they're trying to work through today, I believe. So
yeah.
They're trying to set some circumstances to where you could do team activities. It wouldn't be a full-on practice, for example, in football or in soccer. But, I think if you look at youth soccer and some of the things that have been going on in the summer already, with some protocols, you could at least do some team activity. To me, that would be important to preserve. A, to, you know, have some camaraderie, have some physical activity, you know, keep some of the elements as to why it's important to play sports, especially team sports. But then also you're more prepared to hit the ground running and start your season quicker when you do get the green light, if you get the green light. And this is the other thing, you know, are we going to be in the clear after August 29th? I mean, that,
yeah.
we don't know that, which is gets us back to the thing we've been talking about all spring and summer, and that is wear the mask, keep your hands clean. All of this matters, right? This
yep.
affects directly. If you're a sports fan and you're listening to this show, what you do individually contributes to how
yep.
quickly we'll be able to pull this off. And we've screwed this up, right? We've tried, but obviously, you know, this virus is out there. It's tough. We're going to have to deal with it. And, you know, college sports have got an even bigger mountain of things to look at. And with every passing day, the direction it's going right now, you know, they've got some serious conversations going on right now on a lot of campuses on whether they're going to be able to play as well. But, you know, it hits home here because we're talking about local, and a lot of people listening to our show probably have either a high school team that they love to follow or directly with high school athletes in their family that are going to be directly affected by this.
I'll say this, Willie. So I went and met a friend yesterday for drinks. I was literally sitting right outside First Horizon Park when Minor League Baseball and the Sounds made the announcement that the season had been canceled, which we all knew was coming. But I had my mask. I wore my mask going into the place. Once you got at your table, you could take it off. When I got up to go to the restroom, put it back on, got up to, you know, order at the bar, put it back on, and it became routine. Do I like wearing it? No, not necessarily. But if that's what we need to do, then that's what I'm going to do. And I saw other people doing the same thing. Some people still had theirs on at the table, but, you know, obviously to drink and eat, you got to take it off. But it wasn't that much of an inconvenience to add that to my routine and to my way of living at that place. So just whatever we got to do to slow this thing down and to get back to semi-normal, that's what we need to do. You know, complaining about it is just going to delay everything. So let's just do what needs to be done.
No question. And we got our fingers crossed that we'll be able to pull this off. I know there's, you know, we talked about it when the spring sports were basically canceled for all those high school athletes. And, you know, I've thought about this ever since, right? Because my daughter's a rising senior. This is senior year, you know, right. And I know there's a lot of people out there that have that same thing for the fall sports and the spring sports. This is it. We've got to be able to do what we can to let these kids have their last high school experience. Because that could be it for a lot of them, right? Some will go on and play, but the fact is that the vast majority of high school athletes, this is the last they're going to play competitive sports, right? They're not going to play in college.
Right.
So, you know, all of these things are very important. All right. Today, also, besides this meeting of the TSSAA and all the other things we're going to talk about today, the Nashville SC squad will be heading to Orlando to get into the bubble and prepare for the resumption of their season. So Drake Hills is going to join us. He covers the team for the Tennessean. Looking forward to catching up with him as we'll talk about some of the issues that they're dealing with to try to execute the season properly. So, Chase, looking forward to this. Tell people also what we've got going today. We got a couple other good things up our sleeve.
Kermit Davis coming up at 11. Always enjoy talking to Kermit about, and there's a lot going on in his state right now. So we'll talk to him. Our buddy, Joe Dubin. You may remember the Sports Revolution with Willie Donick and Joe Dubin on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Blitz. We'll talk some high school football with him, and then our weekly chat with Chris Mason, your partner in the booth. So we'll talk to him at 1 o'clock here on the show. Should be a good one.
Yes, and also we'd like to wish everybody a happy Canada Day with Chris Mason coming on the show today. He'll be representing Canada. Also, it is Bobby Bonilla Day, and yes, I've had plenty of people reach out to me to congratulate Bobby Bonilla, beloved member of my Mets, who is going to get paid once again today his annual stipend of $1.19 million from the Mets, thanks to a brilliant deal put together by his agent back in the day. And this is the beauty of it for Bobby. It doesn't end this year. No. He's been getting this since 2011. He gets this until 2035.
Yeah.
That's
well,
not bad.
Didn't he, when he left the Mets, didn't he sign with the Braves?
Well, he left the Mets and then came back to the Mets. He's a well-traveled player. He bounced around to a lot of different teams before it was all over. But it was the first go-round. He signed I think he was the highest-paid player in the game when he signed with the Mets in 1992, and it just went terrible. The second go-round, he played actually against the Braves in 1999. NLCS, when the Braves beat the Mets in six games, some dramatic games in there, but the Braves went on to the World Series. So Bobby Bonilla is well-traveled. He played for the 97 Marlins that won the whole thing. So he played for a number of different teams. But during the whole thing, he got this deal from his agent that deferred payments, and it got interest. And
that
everything.
That was the second time with the Mets.
That was the second time?
Yeah, I'm reading it. This was after the 99 season because he left. So in November 98, the Mets reacquired Bonilla from the Dodgers. His level of play did not measure up to expectations, and he had numerous clashes with Bobby Valentine, the Mets manager.
Oh, yes.
After his subpar 99 season, the Mets released Bonilla, but still owed him $5.9 million. Bonilla and his agent offered the Mets a deal. Bonilla would defer payments for a decade, and the Mets would pay him an annual paycheck of $1.19 million starting in 2011 and ending in 2035, adding up to a total payout of $29.8 million.
He didn't sign. Instead of paying just under $6 million, they've decided to pay him $29
million. Right. Almost $30 million. And then he signed with the Braves. He signed with the Braves
in 2000. And then he signed with the Braves.
Yep. God.
I've tried to purge this from my memory, the details of it. Apparently, I did, but thanks for bringing it back up again.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Congratulations to Bobby. It's just
Happy
another
Bobby
great
Bonilla Day.
Feather in the Mets cap of some of the great things that they have been infamous for over the years. Of course, all of this was going on while the Bernie Madoff pyramid scheme was happening, and the Mets got duped into that one as well. And they're still, just now maybe monetarily are digging out of that hole. So,
right.
Always some things to overcome if you're a Mets fan,
Meet
for sure.
The Mets.
But good for Bobby. All right, when we come back, we'll talk a little soccer. We'll figure out what's going on with Nashville SC as they prepare to get it going again. They've been doing some training, and we'll ask some of the questions that we've been asking of all the sports, handling the challenges that are going on. The TSSSL meeting is going on right now, and we'll keep updating you on what's happening on that front as well. It's a big day for high school sports in our listening area and our state. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more on Darren, Donick, and Chase. We're back here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick and Chase McCabe. Darren, Donick, and Chase is the show. A quick update.
Is this in your wheelhouse, Willie?
Oh, yeah. Tribe Called Quest? No question about it. Yeah, that's a good album. That album is definitely iconic, for sure, from back in the day. A quick note from Tom Crager, who covers high school, of course, for the Tennessean. He's all over this meeting going on in the TSSSA right now. The head honcho, Bernard Childress, basically saying they will not recommend the swap of fall, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
point. But that's something we discussed in the last segment.
It'd be too much. Be too much.
And speaking of the Tennessean, we bring in Drake Hills, and excited to talk to him. He is reporting on Nashville SC for the Tennessean. And, of course, this is the first year, and we're excited to talk to Drake. He's got a great background, studied at Northwestern and then out at Oregon preparing for this. And so, Drake, what a season to cover as you join the Tennessean and cover a team that had such an amazing start, then a tornado, then a pandemic. I mean, you got stories to tell for a lifetime here.
Yeah, just unfortunately not the stories that I was, as you were talking about, predicting to tell. You know, it's crazy. And you mentioned, Tom Crager. We actually sit across from each other. So we've been talking about this just in terms of the tornado situation before the pandemic hit and, of course, the soccer stadium situation back in the winter. I mean, this is what we've been just in awe about how things have transpired for Nashville SC in a situation where, you know, you just go back to some of the other MLS expansion clubs. You take a look at Orlando City just about 5 years ago, and then you've got, you know, clubs like New York City FC around the same time. Shortly after that, Minnesota United. And just to look at, some of their, I guess you can call them, paths into MLS, and even FC Cincinnati, they didn't do so well on the field. But, you know, here they are just some several months away from having a new soccer-specific stadium in downtown Cincinnati. And so, you know, things are building. But the fact that Nashville SC as a club has had to go through all of this, and then even some of their players and their assistant GM and Ali McKay, you know, having to endure damage from the Tennessee tornadoes back in March. And then here we are. You know, at least there's going to be games again in about 7 days. Nashville SC is headed down to Orlando later today. So it's all looking up from here, Willie and Chase, man. It's certainly been a bit of a slouch on my part. I will admit that, you know, we're just looking forward to telling stories about the actual games for a first time in,
oh man.
Yeah. First time in 4 months.
Yeah, no question about it. So Drake, how have the workouts gone? And I don't know what kind of access you've been able to have as the team has gotten the training in to prepare to go down to Orlando, but how do they feel about things?
Exactly. And they, so Nashville SC, we haven't unfortunately been able to get out there to the training grounds and take a look at things, obviously, with how Major League Soccer has, gone to keep not only the players and the staff safe, but also us, the media as well, and the rest who are part of this. But Nashville SC is very appreciative and are aware of the fortunate events that they have been able to train in full, and unlike many other clubs who in different parts of the country haven't been able to train with their full squads. And that's going to have a big effect on how teams are going to come together in a week where, they'll be able to do something in the bubble once they get into the bubble. But teams, including Nashville, were very, very keen on wanting to get as much full training as possible in their home markets because, of course, after nearly 4 months of not training at all, you really lost that juice that you began the season with, the tactical side of things. For Nashville, it's the defensive shape. You're talking about a team who is very strong in defense. You've got a solid back four that, of course, they weren't able to pick up a win, but, I mean, you take a look at it. They had really two world-class goals, one from Emerson Hyneman in Atlanta, which was the second goal, and then, of course, the goal in Portland with Diego Valeria. So that was a one-touch finish. And so, the goals that Nashville did give up, it really explains the hard work that they put in the preseason and how tight, how concise, and how really on the same page they were defensively. It's really just about them going forward and being more dynamic in front of goal. And so they have to get that back. They have to be able to play the 11v11 scrimmages. They have to go out and have the communication back, building that team chemistry, which they worked so hard to do within 5 weeks as an expansion team. So being able to have that full training for over 2 weeks by the time that they get into Orlando, that's an advantage for someone like Nashville as opposed to some other clubs who are going to have maybe only a couple of days of full team training in the home markets before they get down to the bubble in Orlando.
It's going to be a lot of fun to see if an underdog expansion team can hang in this. And you would think, Drake, that, based on what we've seen in the past in World Cup play and things like that, in a small tournament setting like this, where, nobody's played for a long time, there might be a little bit of an equalizer, as you said, if they can work to their strengths and play really good defense, they could be right in these games. And if they pull an upset or two, that could mean a lot for their viewing audience and maybe create a little bit of a buzz in this first year.
Of course. I mean, a team like Nashville, obviously, they're in a situation where they've got a lot of veterans who've been around MLS. I mean, obviously, they've got a captain who's been pretty much, he's touching 15 years in Major League Soccer with some great teams that he's played in. Dax McCarty has played for the U.S. men's national team. He's got the experience. If you take a look at their back line, they've got, U.S. men's national team participants in Daniel Lovitz at left back, and you've got Walker Zimmerman, who is an MLS best 11. You're talking about the best 11 players in the entire league last year. He's playing for Nashville this year and obviously scored their first goal. And so you have that veteran leadership, but you also have young, dynamic guys who I think for Nashville fans, really for sports fans in general, they're looking for that one guy, that one spark. And I think the two matches that they played, they didn't really have that opportunity to get into the flow of things. You take a look at someone like Randall Leal, the 23-year-old Costa Rican, who he's a national team guy as well. He's very quick, very speedy. He's technical. He loves to dribble, a little bit of flash to him. He could be that entertaining guy. And the same thing goes for someone like Hani Mukhtar. Some of these players, as you talked about the exposure, I think those players getting a chance to be in this World Cup style, environment where, it'll allow them to, put everything on the line as simultaneously having that defense kind of helping them grind out matches. Because the one thing about this tournament that, unlike the World Cup, the regular season, these group stage matches, they're for points in the regular season standings. And so if they can get that first win up against Chicago Fire on that it's going to be a nice warm night in Orlando on the next Wednesday, it's going to be pivotal for them to get those points. And that's going to be a great opportunity to set them up not only for the rest of this tournament, but for the regular season, if there is a regular season in the fall.
We're talking to Drake Hills from the Tennessean. He covers Nashville SC. So, Drake, I apologize in advance because a lot of my questions will have to do with learning about this game as I continue to try to do. But with
Chase, we'll be patient with you.
I appreciate that because it's the only way you can learn. It's the only way you can learn. With Nashville moving to the East, having not played, obviously this is the first season that they're here. They played two games in the West. What is the biggest difference in the level of competition between the East and the West? Is this a better fit for Nashville SC moving to the East?
Well, I think if you just take a look at the schedule and the grind that they would have to go up against. I mean, by this time, we still would be 4 days away from Nashville's first home match in, 2 months or something like that. Because if the season had gone on the way it was scheduled to, if the pandemic had not hit, they would have been on the road since, late May. And the amount of grinding that takes for an expansion club to come from Nashville to go out to Vancouver, to go out to San Jose, to go out to L.A. for a back-to-back against LAFC and L.A. Galaxy, that takes a toll. And when you're doing that for that amount of time and you've got a squad who isn't necessarily the most deep squad, not only just in the Western Conference but in all of MLS, I mean, that's going to really challenge what your squad will look like in the middle of the season, which is where we would have been if it weren't for the pandemic. And so the fact that they're in the Eastern Conference now, I think that in terms of talent, listen, you've got teams like Atlanta United, you've got teams like, someone like even a Philadelphia Union. Obviously, we know what happened with New York City FC last year, a team that was, a top seed in the Eastern Conference, unfortunately didn't do the best and got knocked out by Toronto FC in the playoffs. But you got talented teams in the East as well. So it's not as lopsided as one may think, but certainly in terms of a regular season resume, it may help to go up against an FC Cincinnati, a newly founded Inter Miami team, an Orlando City team that they're going to be able to see in the final match of the group stage in the MLS Cup July 20th. And so I think in terms of talent, sure, I mean, there may be a bit of a difference, but there won't be necessarily, a lesser level of opposition. I mean, you still got talented teams across the board in MLS compared to Nashville, but it certainly helps that, in a regular season, let's say they do get 6 points, and then let's say they get 2 wins in the group stage, and they get knocked out later, they enter a regular season resume with those 6 points, they go up against a Cincinnati, they go up against a Montreal, they go up against perhaps a Columbus Crew or even a New York Red Bulls. And they have a schedule that's probably more regional that can help with the travel, that can help with what is likely to be a more compressed season schedule. They may play every 3 days, something like that, maybe even shorter, maybe it's every 4 days. We don't know. So, I mean, the fact that the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference is so different for Nashville, not only geographically, but also just taking a look at a potential schedule as well. I think it can help, and I just think it makes more sense.
Do you see a scenario where they just, even next year, they stay in the East, or is that not possible?
Well, it's certainly a scenario, but it's just the fact that when asked about it a couple of weeks ago when the news was confirmed and Don Garber had told me, the commissioner for Major League Soccer, Don Garber, had said, that's not what they were thinking. That wasn't at the decision table at that moment. That this was simply a 2020 decision. And the fact that, there are MLS expansion teams coming. Of course, you've got Charlotte coming in 2021. You've got Austin FC being the third team of Texas. And the fact that one in Charlotte would most likely be in the Eastern Conference and then Austin would most likely be in the Western Conference. I think there is a scenario where Nashville is in the Eastern Conference. It's all but confirmed as of right now. I don't see a reason why they shouldn't stay in the Eastern Conference. I just think it makes too much sense for them to go back to the West.
So now here comes one of my learning questions. With this and something we've talked about with other sports, like baseball, Nashville has proposed, having a free agent league here in Nashville at First Horizon Park that teams can pluck from. How will roster movement work with all of this in the bubble? Are trades allowed? Like how does that work in general with MLS, and how will it work under this scenario?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question because, you know, I actually wrote about this in talking with General Manager Mike Jacobs just a few weeks ago, and talking about it starting from the top, you know, FIFA being the world governing body, and they are having to really reconstruct a transfer period. Now, of course, teams are able to sign players, but, you know, they have to be careful because the targeted allocation money, the discretionary targeted allocation money that is, you know, fully funded by the club instead of, you know, funds coming in from the league, which would be general allocation money, if they are used and signed by targeted allocation money, they cannot participate in the MLS's back tournament. Now, of course, it would be, you know, weird for Nashville to sign a player like, you know, the day before the tournament and then try to have them play. But, of course, you know, there have been rumors, you know, looming about Nashville having a summer signing, but, you know, most likely would be a winter transfer window signing, which, you know, would start, you know, after the season going into the preseason in January in 2021. So in terms of player acquisition, it's very confusing because you've got a situation where leagues are still playing. Obviously, if you take a look at across the pond, you've got the English Premier League still going on. You've got La Liga in Spain still going on. The Bundesliga in Germany had just finished, and obviously Major League Soccer is resuming. And so, you know, the transfer market is a bit out of balance. And if you take a look at how teams can acquire, they can do so. It's just a matter of for how much and when that player will be available, because those things are just, as I said, out of balance, because you may have one player who's in Germany right now who they're looking at, in England right now, but, you know, he's still under contract with his club, and so he may not be available. So that could be tricky for not just National FC, but really any MLS team who's looking to sign a player from outside of MLS.
Drake, before we let you go, you've been watching closely how they've been preparing everything down in Orlando. I know there was a little flare-up of positive tests out of the Dallas team, I believe. But are you fairly optimistic they'll be able to execute this tournament down there, even though we've been hearing and reading all of the things that Florida is dealing with right now? They've got a rising number of cases. But if they can get started and everybody starts in the, quote, bubble, can they finish this thing okay?
I would say I'm, in a limited sense, I'm optimistic. It's FC Dallas have had confirmed cases. Obviously, there have been reports even about Orlando City and some players even before they entered the bubble. At least part of the team who entered the bubble, some players had kind of refrained from doing so at the time with the rest of the team, and, you know, have been treated due to that. And then, of course, obviously today with reports about FC Dallas. I just think that there's going to be confirmed tests. You know, somehow, some way, I'm not going to, you know, speculate on which team or how many players or anything like that. But I just think that just the way that this virus has not only, you know, hit Orange County in Orlando, but also in Florida and even across the country and in these respective MLS markets, I just think that that's going to be a part of the narrative. Do I think that is going to be destructive? I don't think so to the tournament, but I do think that it can be a factor, and it'll be something that will not necessarily be trending, but it will be a lingering storyline just based off of how frustrating this virus has been across MLS markets. I do think that they will have a complete tournament. Now, will this maybe have some ramifications on an MLS resume in the fall? That remains to be seen, but that definitely is something to look out for as teams go back to their markets, and Nashville will have a series of games. If the MLS does resume, Nashville would have a series of games back at Nissan Stadium.
Yeah, let's hope we can get to that point. That would be exciting to have some games in our city. Drake, thanks for all of the info. Enjoy watching this unfold, and like you said, we'll keep our fingers crossed that they can execute this tournament. We'll have some soccer to enjoy here. Good stuff. All right, that's Drake Hills, who covers Nashville SC for the Tennessean. We will give you an update on what's being discussed in the TSSAA meeting right now in regard to fall sports and the proposals for what they're going to do in particular with girls soccer and, of course, high school football. There's some proposals being thrown out there. We'll toss them out to you when we come back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Plenty going on here on this Wednesday at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren, Donick, and Chase. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe, Marquise Munson. Good stuff from our man Drake Hills, who's covering Nashville SC. Of course, we're the flagship station of Nashville SC. We'll have plenty of coverage of the tournament down in Orlando, which, fingers crossed, will get up and running next week. Which is kind of a mini World Cup, the way they're doing it. It's a good idea to try to resume some play. And then what happens after that, as he said, that's a really big question, is can they finish the season in any form from the home cities after this is over in Orlando? So, Chase, you know, you got to be concerned, of course, of what's going on down there. But yep. Let's just keep our fingers crossed that they can get started and finish, which will be... You know, I think, you know, from our standpoint, a tournament play might be a great way to grab some interest, especially if they can be competitive down there. You might have some people tuning in and really enjoying this because, as we said, where baseball missed the window to have a lot of the spotlight in the month of July, I think this tournament's going to have great coverage across the country because there's no other sports ready to roll until at least August.
Yeah, and this is... You know, for somebody like me that's learning the sport, a lot of people are learning the sport. I mean, it's a great opportunity because the three games that we already know about are going to be at different times. You're going to have one that's at like 9:30 at night. You're going to have one that's 8 in the morning. You're going to have a 6 or 7 o'clock game, and you can hear those. We will broadcast those on both 102.5 and 94.9, so you'll be able to hear those. When Nashville SC starts playing. So it is a great opportunity to get new eyes on your sport, to get people that are interested in Nashville SC, we're looking forward to going to games, to learning the sport, learning the players. They're not able to go in person, but they can listen on the radio, they can watch on TV, and I think that that's going to be big for them. And I think that question goes with all sports of, well, once they get started, can they finish? And there's really only one way to find out. You're going to have to do it and hope for the best and adjust as you go. And that's just kind of where we're at with Nashville SC and with MLS. But I'm glad that they're headed down there and they're going to get this thing started here very, very soon.
Meanwhile, before we get to the high school stuff, because there's a lot to absorb here and it's happening really as we speak at this point. But there was a report earlier today, Bob McKenzie, saying that even though they have not made an official announcement, it appears that Canada will have both hub cities for the NHL's resumption. And really, when you look at all the cases, I don't think it's shocking at all. It's the number of cases in Las Vegas and the direction that the arrow was pointed really throughout our country. I can see why they're looking at Toronto and Edmonton as the two cities to host the tournament. So, and that, I guess a few months ago, we might have been shocked that that was the case. I'm not as shocked based on where things are going. But
yeah, but weren't the reports as of yesterday, Vegas was still in the running? I mean, that a lot of people were saying Vegas and...
The reports last week, too, were that Vancouver was all but certain to get it. And they went away from Vancouver, so... It is turned on a dime.
I am not going to believe anything until I see an official announcement from Gary Bettman. That's just kind of where I'm at this point on these hub cities.
Yeah, but that's the latest, is that there's a lot of speculation that it will be Edmonton and Toronto, which makes sense geographically. You could send, you know, one group of teams to one area of the continent and the other to the other area. And now which way would you go? Would the West teams go to the East? In the east to the west, that's what most people are thinking is going to happen. But once they're there, you know, they're going to be in one spot for all the games anyway. So we'll wait and see on that. Now let's try to give the latest on what's happening at the TSSAA meeting. It appears that the swap of the sports is not going to happen fall and spring, right? Yeah. That is what we kind of thought would happen.
Which
I'm
glad.
The board has already had a vote. Am I seeing this right from Tom Crager on Twitter?
Well, I had options pulled up, so that's hang on.
Because the other thing that's been proposed, Bernard Childress has put out three different proposals for the schedule for high school football. Now, to bring people up to speed, because of the governor's order, the TSSAA high school sports cannot start, at least in terms of contact sports, which would include girls soccer and high school football, until at least August the 29th. So they're trying to put together a schedule to get all the games in after that time. The other sports, volleyball, cross country, the other sports that take place that are not contact sports, they feel like will be able to start on time based on the protocols that are out there. So that's a good sign. But they're trying to push back and get everything in the fall. I feel like they're going to go that way. The Virginia plan, I guess, has a certain amount of support. I think 22% of the board voted for the Virginia plan.
And let me say this is what we need to clarify. So what Crager is talking about, 55% of coaches, this is the coaches association. The board meeting that I believe we're referencing is TSSAA. I think this could be two different things. I could be wrong. I'm trying to figure all that out too, because just a few minutes ago, Crager was laying out the different proposals that Bernard Childress has put forth. And like option one, the TSSAA would set the region schedules. Practice would start on August 30th. The first game would be September 18th. And one proposal would be a 7-game season, and they would start the playoffs on time. As another part of it, a 16-team bracket season on September 18th, an 8-game season, first game of the playoffs would be scrapped. Teams not in the playoffs would be able to play two additional games. There's a third proposal, 8-team bracket, still start on the 18th, cut off 2 weeks of playoffs, give them a 9-game season, only region champions in the playoffs. So,
right. Let's go through those three, because I think this is going to create a lot of discussion. And very simply, as we mentioned, cross country, golf, and volleyball should be okay after the dead period finishes and you resume the way you normally would. For girls soccer, they won't. I think they're trying to work out having some extended team workouts under some protocols, but they can't play any games until after August the 30th. They're going to try to compress the schedule, maybe push it back a few weeks, try to reschedule games that can't be played. Obviously, games would start in August normally. You can't play those games, so try to make them up. They feel like there's at least some optimism they can get the whole season in. Now for football, as you mentioned, the three proposals are pretty interesting. I've always felt, Chase, that in general, a 32-team postseason bracket is unnecessary. I just think that's too many teams to let into the postseason. A lot of people probably would disagree, especially with all the classifications
I think
they have here.
I mean,
option. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Yeah, sorry. When you have teams that get into the playoffs with a losing record, or it's just based on they're in a bad region or whatever, that's
right. Because in some cases, it's not just a team that's 5-5 or 4-6. In some cases, yeah. I've seen teams make it with worse records than that.
I've seen. I can remember a few years ago, I've seen teams with like 2 or 3 wins get in, and just based on.
Right, and they get clobbered by the number one seed.
Right.
And so this is an alternative to that, and it's out of necessity because of the COVID-19. But let's lay them out. One would be you would start practice, when the situation changes on August the 30th. You have a 3-week preseason. First game, September 18th. You play 7 regular season games, and then you start the playoffs on time. In other words, you would still play the regular amount of postseason games, but you would shave the regular season down by 3 weeks. And if that happens, the TSSAA would have to reschedule the region games. So all of the scheduling that's been done to this point would be scrapped. And for teams, and this to me is an interesting twist to it, because for some of the teams that we're just talking about, teams that don't make the playoffs – you get the chance to play two additional games with other teams that don't make the playoffs, and so you get nine games in. So that would only be one less game than you would normally play. And so that would leave the teams in the 32-team bracket that we're talking about that get clobbered in the first round. They only play eight games, and they're likely to get slaughtered in the first round of the playoffs anyway. So what's better? So here's proposal two. Now, this one, to me, makes a lot of sense. You take the postseason down to 16 teams instead of 32.
Yep.
You play an eight-game regular season starting on September the 18th. So you just get rid of the first round. And still, for the opportunity for those teams that don't make the playoffs, they can play two additional games. And so I think that's a really good balance. So you get 10 games in for a lot of those teams. And some of those teams that would scrape into the playoffs and get and be huge underdogs in the first round, maybe they win a couple more games and they play more teams that have like level of competition. So that sounds good to me in any season. Right? Forget about trying to make it work this season. Then the third proposal, you would play nine games in the regular season and then have only an eight-team postseason bracket, only the region champions in the playoffs. And I think we know that that has no shot.
No.
Right? There's no way.
I don't like that.
That some of these programs in tight, tough regions are going to say only the region champion goes. It would be a heck of a competition for those region championships, but I just don't think that's happening.
Yeah, And Tom Crager even says option three. Well, I don't get it. Hard to even explain. I think option two, that's where they want to go. Now, a lot has to happen. I mean, this order has to end on August 29th. They have to be able to hit the practice field on August 30th.
Right.
To make this work, to make a lot of these work. But
right.
Because
guarantee that.
Right. Because all three have a August 30th practice start and September 18th. You start playing games, which that's not a lot of time to get ready to start playing games, but you kind of got to do what you got to do there. I do agree, though, that in Bernard Childress said, huge concern moving baseball and softball to the fall. They've already sacrificed a lot. I agree with that. I'm glad that they don't seem to be leaning that way. But I think if they come up with that second option, that would be the way to go. I like that. It's fair. And I agree with you on the playoffs, that letting too many teams in, that just it doesn't make sense that you have teams there that don't deserve or they don't deserve it. And they just it's bad. You know, it's bad for morale. They're just going to get blasted anyway. So I think that this scenario works, in my opinion. This is the better scenario.
Well, so with that in mind, we'll see where it goes. But as you said, all of this is a great plan, and they're doing everything they can to set the plan accordingly. But as you mentioned, there are some things out of their control to whether they can actually start practice by that time. They bought themselves some more time, or they're in the process of buying time to try to get the schedule in. You know, adjust the schedule accordingly to get as many games in as possible, have your plan. But what changes on August 30th? Can we be guaranteed that we'll get the green light? No. And then, of course, all of the other things. These sports are talking about testing everybody and all of that stuff. They obviously don't have the same capability of testing the athletes in these cases. Right now, You might be sitting there going, haven't you guys been talking about youth baseball going on all summer? Yeah, that's the case. Nobody's been tested for those. So so far, so good in my experience with that. But, of course, you don't know. All of these things you're reading about, you know, asymptomatic people walking around and maybe carrying the virus, that's an issue, right? So we haven't had anything bad. There was a really scary thing that I was reading last night about just with the number of people playing and just doing the math, you know, it just stands to reason that, you know, it's going to be a very, very small number, but you will have a certain amount of people that may end up just by odds, right? It's not anything against sports or anything like that, but just, you know, people are going to have to, some people would be adversely affected, right? With enough people playing, the percentages are just, there's going to be people that might even have to be hospitalized, even though these are young, healthy athletes who are less susceptible. But just if enough people are participating, the odds are maybe somebody is going to be adversely affected in a serious way. So these are all concerns, and we have to weigh the risk with the reward of being able to execute these seasons and have the fulfillment of being able to participate, right, in this window. These are really, really tough issues here.
I can't imagine, you know, what it's like, you know, for you and Aaron specifically as parents having to, I mean, because you obviously have to help make these decisions. I mean, this is what a lot of parents are going to be doing this fall is, yes, you have 16, 17-year-old kid that they look at it as, okay, I want to play, the season's been moved, whatever. But you as parents have to weigh those options that they're not necessarily looking at and then help make those decisions for them. And those conversations are going to be what's going to be tough, because you're going to have some parents that go, I can't let you play. I can't let you be a part of this because, you know, one of us is susceptible or a grandparent or something like that. So that's another thing that's having to be weighed in all of this.
We will process this as we go forward today. We mentioned Joe Dubin is going to join us at 12:30, and we'll kick this around some more. We'll also update you on anything else that comes out of the meeting, which continues to go on right now. When we come back, we'll switch gears. We'll talk to Kermit Davis, who has been at the forefront, the big change in the state flag of Mississippi. Of course, he grew up in that state. He knows all about the history there. And, of course, now as the head coach of Ole Miss, it has been a very important issue down there in a big historical moment the other day when the state legislature approved the change of the flag. Stay tuned. We'll talk to Kermit when we come back. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.